You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome back to Bob, Dave, and Moore. Shannon Dreher filling in for Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, Jim Moore. And I teased ahead that we were going to take callers for Shannon Dreher, possibly, to answer questions. It would help if I'd given the phone number. How about that? 866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776. Or you can text them into the Vizzy Hard Seltzer line, 710-710. But lots of questions for you, Shannon. We know that there's going to be a 60-man roster, right? There's going to be a player pool. There's going to be baseball on either the 23rd or 24th. It's going to end September 27th, 60 games. One of the things that I'm most excited to talk to you about, Shannon, is you've been writing these articles, Get to Know Your Mariners, and you know a few of the guys, Austin Nola, Logan Gilbert, Cal Raleigh, Jake Fraley, Taiwan Walker, Julio Rodriguez. I think Julio Rodriguez is probably the most interesting one because you hear about him. He's kind of like Jared Kelenic, you know, those two young guys and how talented they are. But who was your favorite interview? Was it somebody that I didn't mention possibly?
Oh, wow. Well, that's a tough one. I enjoyed all of them, and a lot of those were done in spring training, sitting in the sunshine behind cactuses or cacti, if you rather, and that just great memories all around there. Austin Nola was actually, the two Louisiana guys are really great. Austin Nola and Taylor Gilbo were really fun to talk with. And Gilbo, literally, I went into that interview. You remember he came over late last year in a trade. He is, a rookie reliever. You're not going to talk to him very much. And you go online, you can find out nothing about him. There's nothing on there. And about all you knew was a couple of appearances that you saw with him. And I literally sat down, and it was a literal get to know. I had no idea. There was next to no prep. And it was great to hear about his small hometown and what it's like to go home in the off season, and you know, just kind of a down home guy. And he and Nola's from New Orleans, both cook, and we got talking about gumbo and how they were kind of different and how that they would make it. And Austin Nola made his first gumbo by himself when he was in spring training, and his mom told him what to do, and he got all the stuff, and he got to cooking it, and he used a spatula to stir it and ended up melting the spatula into the gumbo. So, I mean, these are things that happen to the ball players too. But just, you know, little things that, they're definitely baseball conversations within the conversations, but just also, you know, who are these guys away from the baseball field?
Shannon, I was excited to hear the news about Austin Adams. I know he's going to, start on the 60-day injured list, but it sounds like he's going to be ready to go, ACL tear last year. I was impressed with what he showed last year, and so I was excited to hear that he's coming back.
Yeah, this was somebody who they targeted. He's a guy that the analytics guys got their hands on the numbers and decided, you know what, we can do this a little bit better. And Austin was totally into it. And the way that they work with the pitchers, they get the analytics people involved in it. And, you know, this pitch works better for you in this situation. If you throw this more, this percentage works better for you. This is what happens when you don't do it. They get the biomechanics guys into it, working on, you know, just better ways to be more efficient with their delivery. And sometimes guys will come in and grasp on to everything. And on the hitter side, Tom Murphy was that last year. And it really, Austin took to it. He was into the analytics. And he had the stuff, too, and he had the attitude. He's got a little bit of that kind of crazy look to him when he's out on the hill, which you love in a reliever, and really had it all going, then had the knee injury, tore the ACL, had to have the surgery, and came into spring training. We saw him working his way through that, and he was cleared while he was out. And a little bit different with baseball, you can go see other team doctors. The Rays team doctor cleared him, and so he is expected to be a full go in spring training. He's been throwing bullpens, they say, at 100%.
What about the bullpen in general, Shannon? I mean, there's names I recognize, and honestly, some I really don't.
There are a lot of names. I think what's going to be exciting about the bullpen is you're going to see some of those young guys. And I don't know if you'd heard of Sam Delaplane, but he was down in Arkansas and just put up crazy numbers, some of the best strikeout numbers in all of minor league baseball last year. And he was kind of the star coming in, and he, I want to say, was a 33rd round pick. He was a, you know, just you know, a diamond in the rough there. But when they got to spring training, it was another lower round pick, Joey Gerber, who was the one who really stood out. And now with the expanded roster, I think you've got a chance to see all of them. The Rule 5 guy, Johan Ramirez, when he was on the fastball, looked fantastic. But can he command it, which is the question with so many of them. So I think what you're probably going to see is they did bring in a couple of veterans or a couple of veterans returning. But I think that this is the area where you're going to see some of the young players. And one of the tougher things about what we're going to watch is, you know, your Julio Rodriguez's and your Jared Kelnick's and Noel V. Marte and Logan Gilbert's and all the draft picks are going to be down in Tacoma. And I don't think we're going to be able, even as media members, to go watch them. They're going to be so close but so far away from us. But I think where you will see the impact will probably be in that bullpen.
Yeah, that's what I'm most interested to see are the young guys, you know, and especially the two you mentioned. Been hearing about Kalanick. I remember Scott Servais told him that that guy had, like, the most impressive workout he had ever seen, you know. And I've heard that about, like, Josh Gordon in football. Like, this guy is the best athlete I've ever seen. The way Servais was describing him, that was really fun to listen to. You did an article, I think it was in early March, Shannon, about Servais talking about possibly – being a little bit more aggressive on the bases, trying to steal more bases. They were fifth last year, and most of those steals were, what, Malik's, D. Gordon, you know, Dylan Moore a little bit. But do you think just not only in that respect, but maybe in other aspects as well, that they're going to be maybe a little bit more aggressive? And as I said before, you know, maybe innovate or maybe experiment a little bit and use the 60-game season for to that end.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they do that on the bases. It's something that they always preach in spring training. This is the time to push it. And it's not just stealing the base. It's going first to third. You know, things like that. How much right. can you do out there? But as far as the season goes, it's 60 games. It would be great to go out there and win a championship. But the way the Mariners are viewing it is, yeah, they'll go out and compete, but they want to make up for lost time for both the guys that will be down in Tacoma, the minor league prospects that need it, and the young ones on the big league team. And so, you know, to me, I'm wondering if you will see a little bit more of that in the game. And that attitude is like you don't have to do everything to win the game if the payoff is finding out if you can push it here and learning a little bit more about yourself or stealing bases or going first to third at the big league level. And they certainly have more guys that can run. I mean, you even look at Evan White over at first base. You don't see a lot of first basemen running. Well, he can run a little bit. He is somebody that should be able to get some stolen bases. I don't think we've seen as much as we can out of J.P. Crawford. Obviously, Malik Smith is there, so there are a number of them, and they're going to have a good guy to look up to in D. Gordon in that.
Well, speaking of fast guys, you know, D. Gordon there, you just mentioned him. I mean, his role looks, what, utility? Is that what he's going to do? And I just wonder, I mean, is there, he's a trade candidate, I'm sure, and is there a trading deadline during this short season?
There is. It's August 31st, but it's going to be kind of complicated because only players who are on the 60-man player pools can be traded. So yeah, if you were trying to kind of sweeten a deal and go down and get a A-ball kid who might turn into something, that player is not going to be available. So I don't think we're going to see what we typically see at a trade deadline. I think the thing that you're going to see the most is you know, some teams will be trying to acquire something. Some will probably be trying to replenish what they may have lost due to the coronavirus. If they lose, you know, good numbers of players that have to go into quarantine. But I think the other thing that you're going to see is teams trying to get rid of a little bit of salary. So D. Gordon has a certain value for this Mariners team. He is definitely a leader on this team. He is definitely a leader of these young players. It's a role that he embraces. So if he is on the team at the end of the season, I don't entirely think that is a bad thing. I think that there is a lot that he can contribute, even if he is not every day at one position.
It's Bob, Dave, and Moore. We got Shannon Dreher, our special guest, in here. We're peppering her with questions, and you can too. Call in 866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776, and then you can also text in any questions. You know, talking about all these young guys, Shannon, and how excited we are to see one guy that I came across his name, and I was like, oh, yeah, what about Kyle Seager? How about Kyle Seager? What do we expect from him this year? I mean, he's always been very solid dude, but you know, just not a lot of mention of the Kyle Seagers on this team.
I think you expect Kyle Seager. I think that, you know, he has got the track record behind him. I know that there have been some ups and downs, and that there were some answers that he felt that he found in last season. And I think that you look for him to pick up and continue with that. I think there was some question, you know, before everything happened, would this be a guy that could put together something that might be a trade candidate? And I don't think he's going to be. I think he will be less tradable, even though he's getting closer to getting out from under the entire contract, although it does have the poison pill where the team that acquires him must take on an extra year. But I think in this day and age and where prices on players are going to go, he's probably going to be with the Mariners for some time. So you look for him to just pick up where he left off last year. And it's funny that you put it the way that you put it. You know, I don't think he is somebody that you worry about too much right now.
Shannon, the Busy Hard Seltzer text line, the 425, wondering about, is there a future ace in the Mariners organization in the minor league system?
Well, if you'd asked me that 3 weeks ago, I would say no. And if you asked me that today, I would say there's a potential one, yes. Emerson Hancock is seen as a top-of-the-rotation pitcher. And while the Mariners have drafted so many pitchers with very good arms, there's in the last 2 years in particular, their ceiling is not quite there. Logan Gilbert, I think, is probably close, maybe a 1A, maybe a very good 2, but he did not qualify as an ace when you talk to scouts about him. Using that number 6 pick, going for Hancock, who a year ago was actually a lot of publications had him going first in the draft, and then even after that, a lot of publications still had him as the best arm in the draft. So this is the guy, and it is not something that I think was in the system. I think these guys are moving so much quicker now, particularly in the Mariners system. I think that there is so much that you can do with technology to measure what they're doing, and more importantly, to fix what they're doing. You can break down everything in their movements and motions and windups and flight of the ball, how it comes out of the hand. And the result is, rather than spending a season or a half a season trying to, quote, find it, they can break it down in an afternoon in some cases and get to work on it. So I think that when you look at these guys and say, oh, he's still years away, they're a lot closer than they've ever been before.
Hey, Shannon, let me ask you about Evan White. And I read that at the time when he signed his contract, it was the largest contract for an American player who had not played above Double A. Earlier when I was saying, well, they played, 10, 11 games? I was looking at his numbers because he played 9 spring games and batted 333. And then at Double A Arkansas, Evan White was 293 batting average, 18 home runs, 55 RBIs. It's really interesting, this contract. You know, the first 3 years, it's 1.3, and then year 4, it's 3, year 5, it's 7, year 6, it's 8. Is one side or the other going to be really happy on this one? I mean, he could end up being a bargain for the Mariners, right? I mean, if he gets to the arbitration years, and let's say that he becomes the greatest first baseman in all of baseball, you know, he'll be making $3 million of that year, if I'm right.
That's the way that I looked at it, and some people looked at it and tried to, quantify what he could possibly be and what he would have to do to get there, and he doesn't have to do a lot to earn that contract. And it might not all come in 1 year or over the course. You might have more of that contract earned over a couple of years rather than each individual year, but that's an investment that they're making. You know, that's something that they've decided that they can do. This year was about developing a couple of these players or further developing them at the major league level. Kyle Lewis, same way right now. So that's kind of where you're kind of hurt by not having those games. But this is a guy that they believed in. He might not have had the best numbers of his class of players or kind of readiness, but it was the entire package with him. It was the intangibles on top of it. When he was up at the end of the year with the group that was just watching and in the clubhouse before and after, you notice that the young players really gravitated to him. I think that he's probably one of the leaders of this young group. And it's a different dynamic because a lot of people, who's going to lead these? You need the veteran. these young players have been together so long, and most of them spent the entire year at Arkansas. It was almost like they took over the clubhouse a little bit, and that's not a bad thing if you're committed to growing them as a group. And I think that he is a huge part of that. And the numbers, you know, particularly on the Mariners side, I don't see as outrageous.
Shannon, the projected starting outfielders, Kyle Lewis, Malik Smith, Jake Fraley, of those three, is it Lewis who factors in the most for, like, say, 2023 season?
I think automatically it is, but I think you're also taking a really good look at Jake Fraley. And he's somebody that a little bit, I don't want to say a late bloomer because he's still so young, but he's one of those guys that had the swing change and then all of a sudden things changed quite a bit. And then as he became more of a power hitter, I mean, he used to be kind of more of a defense speed guy, and now he's more of a kind of power guy. I think that you do take a longer look at him right now, and he will get that opportunity, but he's going to be pushed with the outfielders that are coming up with Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez, probably not too far behind, but there's some good potential there with him as well.
Shannon, you know anything about this Nashville pool of emergency call-up teams that they were possibly gonna go with? And it would be, I don't know if it was like 30 on each side or 15 maybe, where they would play games, be able to stay competitive, and they would be available for call-ups, I guess, in if there's COVID-19 tests or injuries.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting one because, of course, there are no minor leagues to take from right now, but it technically is allowed. Minor league players who are on suspended contracts because of the national emergency, they are eligible to go play somewhere else and get paid. And I think I heard that these players would get paid $400 a week, which is what they are getting paid if they are still on a major, on a MLB roster right now. So, it'll be interesting to see who turns up for that, how many players take them up on that, but it appears that there will be a mechanism to get them onto a 60-man roster, and it's legal if they're on suspended contracts.
Shannon, we have a question from the 206 wanting to know what instrument you played in the Husky band.
I know this one.
I played the trumpet.
You played the trumpet?
Did you, Shannon and I are fellow trumpet players. Did you know that? Yes, I did. I played. Actually, my son took it a little while ago. This was probably 10, 12 years ago. And I pulled out his trumpet, and he had the Saints go marching in. And I was actually able to read the music and play it. I couldn't believe it because it had been like 25, 30 years since I picked up a trumpet. But Shannon was a lot better than me.
Great. I think we need to hear that. I think you need to play that in the next segment.
Well, the trumpet is long gone. Do you have yours around, Shannon?
No.
You don't? Why not?
There might be one somewhere.
Would you ever?
That's not something you just pick up. No, and I'll tell you this much. Dan Wilson has been trying to get me to play the anthem for the last 2 years. It's the first thing that he says to me every Tuesday when he comes into the booth. And he's very disappointed that I haven't done it. But if you know anything about brass instruments, why?
You lost your lip. Right? You lost your lip.
The technical term is embouchure, but yeah, it's shot.
Really? Oh, Shannon, I think it'd be cool if you could pull that off.
All right. You know what? You pick up a trombone and learn it, and then I will, I'll see if I can get it back and play it.
Yeah. Jim used to play the trombone.
I did at Redmond Elementary way back when. I did, Dave, and I know why you're laughing. I do know why you're laughing.
Yeah, that was. We can't mention that on air.
No.
A certain kind of Jim played a certain kind of trombone. But
yes, I did.
Anyway,
all right, Shannon. I have another personal question from the 206, and you know these 206 questions are coming from my cell phone, I believe. Why do you like collies so much?
That's the first dog. I mean, this is going way back, but my grandparents, who lived in Puyallup at the time, we lived on the East Coast, had a collie named Princess, and it was a big, like, 140-pound collie. And when I was little, loved the dog. My sixth birthday, I want to say, parents asked, what do you want for Christmas, or what do you want for your birthday? And I said, I want a Princess. So I got my first collie and had three after that.
Very nice.
Awesome. Well, yeah, good. You're a Collie fan. Well, let's go to break, Shannon. We really appreciate you, and you're going to hang around with us for the rest of the show, of course, but we appreciate you being our special guest today. And you know what? You get a chance. You get a chance to sit around and talk about WAR. Pro Football Focus. They rank the best defenses of the decade using their WAR stat. These are a bunch of eggheads in the NFL. It's Pro Football Focus. We'll talk about that next on Bob, Dave, and More.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
DJ, you're feeling it today, man. Good tunes. It's probably for Shannon Dreher. Because Shannon Dreher has been filling in for the vacationing Bob Stelton. Jim Moore, Dave Wyman, Bob, Dave, and Moore with Shannon filling in today. Just did yeoman's work in the last segment and the beginning segment, answering all of our Mariner questions. I'm starting to get fired up for baseball, and especially, you know, getting to know these kids and just seeing the future of this team. It's going to be exciting. I hope it goes off as planned. Sam Monson wrote something at Pro Football Focus where he ranked the best defenses of the decade. And now they used their WAR stat, and they ended up putting the 2013 Seahawks fourth. Number one was the 2015 Denver Broncos. So, and, you know, it's interesting that this comes up because the other day K.J. Wright was asked about what he thought was the best defense that the Seahawks ever had, and you know, I'm looking at statistically the 2014 defense was actually better than the 13 defense. I mean, they were number one in yards, number one in points. I think they were number three in rushing. They gave up 81 yards, and then only 185 passing. And so when you look at Sam Monson's numbers, you know, the Broncos, who were number one, 18.5 points per game and 283 yards per game. That's a lot more. But the Pro Football Focus nerds, they have a different way of looking at things. But, you know, Jim, it's like you with baseball stats. I remember there was some argument at one point. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was WAR or something like that, or it probably wasn't. It was something else. And you're like, okay, but you know what? I still like RBIs. I still think RBIs are pretty good. Yeah, and so I feel like we find all these different ways to – and I'm glad because it gives us something to talk about. But, like, last year is the first time I remember in football – paying attention to point differential. Baseball always have looked at that stat, and all of a sudden it became a thing last year. Just kind of the same, like single high safety. You know, everybody just started saying it, and then, you know, everybody caught on to that, and that's all anybody ever says now. It's just like this trendy thing that happens. And so now it seems, Shannon, that the baseball nerds are starting to infect the football nerds, and they're starting to come up with.
You're
going like
to blame this on me.
Like yeah, it's exactly right. You and your people. Shannon.
I would say it's about time you and your people catch up. No, I think that, you know, what can help out here, and I think we were all here, what, about 15 years ago? But in a lot of the stats, I think it's in how you use them. And I think what's hard to reconcile with a lot of them when you are kind of just getting going with them is, well, this number is this, but on the other hand, this is what really happened. And I think especially when you are grading a season's worth of work by an entire unit, I don't think you need to go into the what ifs and try and get everything on equal footing, which is what a lot of the stats do. They take into consideration if, you know, all things else were equal, this is what this team would be, rather than, well, this is what actually happened. There are luck elements that play into things, strength of schedule things that play into things. But I think, you know, for me, if you are going to rank an overall performance, that's actually happened. So why don't you just go ahead and look at that?
Well, Shannon, I know that, right. What was it, a couple of years ago that we were looking at run differential and the Mariners were 54 and 32 and it seemed like they were going to come back to earth, and they did. But are there other, and then last year, Dave, with the Seahawks, we were looking at point differential and going, man, they should be an 8-8 team instead of what they are.
Right.
But what in baseball now do we just devalue completely? Like Dave mentioned, RBIs, I guess that's not that big a deal. I know pitching wins, not that big a deal anymore. Are there other things I'm missing where baseball executives now look at things differently than they used to?
Well, I think ERA, batting average, because there are so many more numbers that are available to you that you don't have to simplify it to something that we can do in our head or on a piece of paper and a pencil in front of us. But, you know, I kind of go back to what you were just talking about there, and that, you know, these numbers, when you look at like a run differential, that was one of the biggest learnings for me, because I've been into the numbers for a long, long time. I don't always talk about them on the broadcast because you're trying to bring people along slowly on it. But the run differential, I didn't want to buy into it that year. And that was a hard one because we kept watching, well, you know, the Mariners are winning, but their run differential is just saying that they can't sustain this. And what I had in front of me in my eyes was, well, what do they know? I'm watching this team every day. I'm down in the clubhouse. I'm talking to these guys. I think this is for real. And I think you have to remember that the numbers more often than not are going to play to themselves. And sure enough, the Mariners in the year that you were talking about, you know, did turn out to what the numbers were expecting them to be. And so I think that you sometimes there are some numbers that you need to put trust in, and run differential when you are in the midst of a season, I think can really kind of, you know, how long can you sustain what you are doing? I think it can be more indicative.
Well, and the simple fact that you just have such a bigger sample size in baseball, right? I mean, and you have so many games and so many things that are repeatable that you can get large numbers on. Whereas in football, you get 16 games and that's it. And one of the things, I mean, that you mentioned, Shannon, and probably this is what feeds into, you know, a part of their calculation, but they have the number one defense in their WAR metric is, it's the Broncos, 18.5 points per game, 283 yards per game. And then they have the Seahawks, 2013 Seahawks, 14.4 points, so 4 points less and about 10 yards less on average per game. But one of the things you mentioned is strength of schedule, Shannon. That to me is also a pretty important one. And, you know, so a lot of those, the new metrics are kind of coming together. They're looking at more numbers. And I have to say, I actually enjoy it. Like, Jim, you know, some of those things I did, like the thing on the sacks, you know.
Oh, the sack extravaganza.
After each sack. Sack extravaganza, yeah. And then, you know, same thing with Russell Wilson and the number of throwing. I'm like you, Shannon. I like getting into the numbers. But, you know, I think especially in football, much more than baseball, it doesn't necessarily tell the story, because, you know, it's a good example would be as a player, Clowney. You know, Jadeveon Clowney had 3.5 sacks. You look at that and go, oh, that's not very good for a guy who's a pass rusher. But, man, if you go watch the games, I mean, he just was so disruptive, and just he allowed other guys to make plays and did so many things that weren't those numbers. And so a little bit easier, I think, to go with the numbers in baseball.
Well, that's one of the things. In intangibles, there's really no way to measure that, which is why they are intangibles. And it's why I think that, you know, you still, everybody is, well, what's going to happen to the scouts? That's always important to have those conversations and to know those things. The one place it really gets me, because I think that the numbers overall can paint a very accurate picture in the game, is that when you get into Hall of Fame voting, and over the last 5 years in particular, we've seen it rely almost, or going in a direction where it looks like it's going to rely all solely on the numbers. And to me, you know, at that point, well, why aren't you just having the computer spit out who the Hall of Famers are every year? I think that there is a human aspect in these games, and there are certain things that where these evaluations and these numbers can be very useful, and there are other things where I think it should probably be hands off. But in baseball, a lot of the time you do have that bigger sample size. Stats are much more individualized too, and many more stats at this point. And I think that the best use of them is predictive. And what is this player going to do in the future? That they do have that history. So, you know, they're here to stay. And it's very interesting for me to see how you were seeing more of these numbers in football. You're seeing more use of the technology, like the StatCast. You know, what kind of route can this runner make? You know, what kind of break can he have and whatnot, and how that's used. And if it goes the way that baseball goes, you're going to see a lot more, you know, plays called on probabilities.
Hmm. Well, I know the analytics are important, and I'm way behind and trying to get up to speed with it. But as I sit here and look at the Seahawks allowing 14.4 points per game and 273 yards per game in 2013, and when I think about the comparisons of that Seahawks defense to the 1985 Bears and other great defenses of all time, I still kind of go, okay, just give me my numbers, and those tell me that they were the best defense of the decade, regardless of what Pro Football Focus is saying.
Well, the thing is, too, that, I mean, the Seahawks did it for a number of years. I mean, was it 3 or 4 years that they led the league in scoring? That's something the 86 Bears did not do, in preventing scoring, I should say. So, yeah, in 13, they were only giving up 2 touchdowns a game. That's incredibly difficult to do in the NFL. Well, coming up next, we're going to talk a little profile of Mariner players. And, Jim, are we going to continue to do this? Is this a thing? Because we did that for the Seahawks.
Yeah, it's kind of a baseball it's a baseball ripoff of the midday show with Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Yeah, they're doing Seahawk profiles. And I thought, hey, that's a good idea. Why don't we do one for the Mariners? So, yeah.
Oh, that's funny, because I thought they ripped that off from us because we were doing profiles on
it's a double ripoff.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't know. Anyway, we're going to talk about Justin Dunn. Nice kid. Talked to him a couple of times last year, and possibly going to be in that starting rotation for the Mariners' 19th overall pick in the 16 draft. Great kid. We'll talk about him next on Bob, Dave, and Moore.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome back to Bob, Dave, and Moore. Got Shannon Dreyer filling in for Bob Stelton today, and decided to do a little profile. I like this idea. Is this your initiative, Jim?
Yes, it is, Dave. It was my initiative.
Wow, that is fantastic. Yeah.
It's a good day to start with having Shannon here.
Shannon, can you believe that he's actually... Hey, and by the way, we've gotten through 2 hours and 48 minutes of the show, and it's all been... Excuse me. It's all been... See, I'm getting choked up. I'm almost in tears because you guys haven't fought at all. I've not had to discipline anyone, put anyone in a corner, as Shannon said, or put somebody in timeout. You guys have been so nice to each other. What happened?
Well, with no sports, he hasn't been able to get himself into any trouble. I'm hoping that this will pick up as baseball comes back.
Oh, what? You mean when baseball comes back and I'll have a horrible take or something and you'll talk me down off of it?
roll her eyes at you.
According to history, yes.
Okay, Shannon, do you ever read my stories at 710sports.com?
Oh, you publish there?
Okay, here we go, Dave.
There we go. Here we go. Yeah.
We couldn't get past 2 hours and 48 minutes. No, I was going to ask you about it's not like I'm going, hey, Shannon, you read my stuff? Well, I guess I did. But I was suggesting the Mariners could win the World Series this year. What do you think?
Why were you suggesting that?
Well, because it's 60 games, which improves your odds over 162. If you're an inferior team, the fewer games you play, the better chance you're going to have. With these players opting out, maybe we'll find out from the Angels that Mike Trout will say, you know what, I'm not going to play this year. There might be things like that that might happen. So I'm thinking that maybe the Mariners, and they went 13-2 to start the season last year, if they get off to a start like that. And then you'd probably say, well, Jim, wait a minute. After 60 games, they were 25-35.
Yeah.
But still.
They went 12-33 after that, I believe.
But this would be different with me being optimistic about the Mariners, and you don't think it's possible.
Well, I'm glad you kind of saw the error of your way, although it's a different team, so you don't know. I think that the thought that anybody can get hot for a 60-game streak, and that the big quote a couple of days ago was, it's not what you do in the first 20 games or the last 20 games, it's those middle 20 games are going to determine it, which is just kind of a take on the entire season in baseball, which who knows if that'll hold up. But I think that you talk with some baseball people, and they're trying to sell it as everybody's 51 and 51 right now. So I don't know that a shorter season is going to benefit them. It's a different schedule. They're going to be facing the NL West, which will be very different. They do have some decent arms. I mean, that's something that could help, but they've also got a lot of guys that don't have a lot of experience. And, you know, in typical years, teams at that 60-game mark, 68% of teams that are in playoff, 68% of teams that make the playoffs in a normal year were in playoff position 60 games in. So I don't know that you can hide a lot, but I guess that there's still a little bit of room there. There's still that 32% that perhaps it could happen.
Are you hearing anything about when the schedule will be released?
No, I'm starting to hear little bits and pieces where some teams have found out where they're opening or who they are opening against, but I haven't really heard when it will be finalized yet. And Players Association is going to have to look at it first, and I'm not even sure it's gotten that far.
Yeah, so let's hear from Justin Dunn a little bit here. I forgot about this. He was traded from the Mets to the Mariners for that. Along with Jared Kalanick and Gerson Bautista for the Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz deal back in 18-19. And we've talked to him, Shannon, I'm sure you have, a number of times. Cut number 8, he was on the Hot Stove Show back in January talking about his goals for this year.
As like Marco, how to be a big leaguer every day. On the field stuff is all the same, and I think that's what kind of clicked for me towards the end there, of realizing it's the same game from Arkansas to Peoria. It's all the same. But now the little intricacies of the game that make Marco what he is, the routine-based person that he is, that made Felix what he is and what he was at the peak of his game. So that's first and foremost. And then obviously when I get the comfort and feel like I'm ready to go, I think I can do pretty well. So never want to put out being an all-star, but hopefully be an all-star again. That'd be pretty cool. And honestly, just stay all year. Once I get up, just never go back. That's my biggest one.
Yeah, this guy we've talked to, I thought the thing that was impressive, Shannon, was he told a story about how he went to like a military school and how he was dropped off on the curb by his parents and was like, okay, see you later. And so it just made him better at adapting to things. And, you know, he says when he goes into a new city, he doesn't have nearly as much of a problem as the other guys. Kid's got a great character.
It's an interesting story. He grew up in Long Island and then played at the Gunnery, was the boarding school that he went to. And so he left home at an early age and spent high school away from home. So he did get used to that, went on to Boston College. And the thing that really stands out, you know, off the field from Justin Dunn, you probably heard it a little bit in that interview, is he is supremely confident. There's no question about that. And when he came up last year, and I think that this was probably ultimately good for him, he had a terrible first outing. He could not get out of the first inning. He walked 5 batters. And I think that it was one of those cases. I don't know if you've ever been so pumped up to do something or just really tried to talk yourself into a big moment that this is going to be no trouble. And then you actually got into that and kind of physically the anxiety took over. I think that kind of got him. He was like, yeah, I got this, I got this, I got this. And then got on the mound and all of a sudden everything felt different, and a very rough first outing. Second outing, again, walked 3 batters, but his last 2 outings didn't allow a run, and they put him in relief, and that helped out a little bit more there. So I think getting those things out of the way was big for him. He's been working out with Eric Cressy for a long time, and he's one of the best names in the business as far as off-season training goes. He's kind of biomechanics and pitcher training, and so good that the New York Yankees have hired him to take over their training, strength and training department. So that tells you something there. And he's been working with him for a long, long time. And he had a good spring training. It was one where there wasn't a spot for him to win, that the 5 spots were pretty much filled. But he sure started to kind of make you start to wonder a little bit as he got to the back of spring training. He was able to face the Angels over in Tempe, and they ran out their full lineup. And he hit Mike Trout, which was kind of awesome, but he otherwise got through unscathed. And then his last outing followed Taiwan Walker in Maryvale, and that was the only appearance that Taiwan made, and it was a very good one. We saw, I think, 96, 97 on the radar gun, and then Dunn came in and pitched 3 innings that were just stellar after that. So I think he really is to the spot right now where it is time to see what he is and a little bit of a longer opportunity, and it looks like he's going to get it.
Well, yeah, it's good news for Justin Dunn with going with the six-man rotation because he probably would have been the odd man out if the season had started on time, if Taiwan Walker was ready to go. But with Dunn, who has the higher ceiling, Shannon, in your opinion? Is it Dunn or Sheffield?
That's an interesting one. I mean, Sheffield we've seen more of, and he made some adjustments at the end of spring training that I think might be a difference maker for him. But that slider is so good by Justice Sheffield, and if he can get to that a little bit more, I think that the stuff, the raw stuff, is probably better. But I think Dunn's got opportunity to really be that strikeout guy as well, and you've got to give him a little bit more time. He hasn't really had it. So that's a good question. I don't think I can answer that one.
I'll say Dunn, okay, Jim? You know why? because you're profiling him.
You know why?
What else did you learn about Justin Dunn?
You know why I stayed silent there? Because I thought we're almost to 6 o'clock here, and I almost said something like, "Well, why can't you speculate?" But I decided not to, Shannon.
I appreciate that. You're going to miss things. Call my insider. We could send you down to see what's going on down there.
Okay, yeah. I'll go down there. I like going down to Cheney Stadium. It's fun.
Yeah, but I've never been down there.
Well, we got to change. Well, we can't change that this year, but we keep talking about going down for Thirsty Thursday or Thursday Thirsty or whatever it is, and we haven't made it yet.
All right.
That's hard to believe, Jim.
I don't know why you're counting the clock. It's not like you had to lead the show. So before the show, I texted Jim saying that I was going to be sick and couldn't make it just to mess with him. And so now we're almost there, and really not too many screw-ups. I mean, it was probably – somebody told me that I sound like a golf announcer when I host the show, but I guess that's
– That's a compliment.
Thanks, said. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but golf's not really a sport, so I'm not sure how I take that.
Okay, Dave, watch it.
There's always learning happening on this show, and we're going to find out exactly what it is we've learned today. What we learned coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
Hey, it's time to find out what we learned. I was waiting for Bob Stelton to start talking there. we'll get Bob back tomorrow. But DJ, we always learn lots and lots of things. Maybe a little bit more because we had Shannon on the show. What did we learn?
Well, first we learned Jim is always innocent.
The text before, I asked this question, am I going to have to put you two in timeout at some point? Are we going to get along today? Or I know we all love each other here, but let's keep
Dave,
it nice.
David, yes, all Jim. Depends on Shannon. I never start these
oh,
things.
Oh, no. I know. You don't.
I'm never at fault.
Perfectly
never
innocent.
To blame. Yeah, it just
sweet
depends.
Little Jimmy.
Yeah, if Shannon gets condescending with me, that's when, you know, I get a little irked and fire back.
Yeah, so Bob gets quite outraged, Shannon, because he's not new to the show, but less than a year. And he slowly started to have these people text in going, why are you so mean to Jim, Bob? And because Bob will come back at him. And Bob has like become outraged over that because, you know, sometimes you don't see that Jim is sticking it to. It's not as obvious when Jim does it, I think. And so then Bob comes back. And then sometimes people complain and say that, do you think that Jim is innocent in most of these things? When he gets on the wrong side of somebody, do you think that's usually the other person's fault? Or
is this a serious question?
Yeah. No, it's not. I know what your answer is going to be.
I think we know on this one. It does seem to be a kinder, gentler Jim right now. Probably because he has to work a little bit more with no baseball. So we take a little bit more pity on him and go a little bit easier with him. But, you know, the one thing that I was just really relieved that I did not hear, and the one that I know where it's probably time to go put him in the corner is, you know, I love you, Shannon, but.
But.
And then you come up with that take that I think, then it's just like, okay, that does not excuse the ridiculous take. So as I said before, with sports coming back, you're probably going to need to get ready and have a plan for Jim and probably prepare Bob a little bit more because he can't be angry all the time over Jim's antics. But I think it's coming back. I sense that it is coming back with Jim.
Okay, first off, Bob is mean to me. Okay, so let's just set the record straight on that. Bob is mean. Okay, secondly, yeah, I think it's going to happen, Shannon, once the Mariners start playing and I interrupt one of your insider reports and I say something like, why do they keep putting Vogie in the lineup when he can't hit left-hander, Shannon? And then you'll be like, well, Jim, they need to find out what they have and or something like that.
I do miss that when you interrupt Shannon's reports. That was always good because she'd be talking, being very professional, and you're like, Shannon, like a little kid tugging on his mom's shirt. Shannon. Yeah, I do miss that part. Yeah. What else did we learn, DJ?
We learned about the time that Jim really crossed the line.
Until Shannon blocks Jim on Twitter because she's had enough, then you know it's gone a little bit too far. But I don't anticipate that it'll go that way today. Right, Shannon?
Probably around hour two, he will be blocked.
Okay. That was still one of my favorite responses ever when Jim asked you, why did you block me on Twitter? And Shannon simply said, I had had enough. And that's one of the quotes that I'll always remember from our station. And my career as a broadcaster is just fantastic. But
I can't remember what prompted that.
Oh, it could have been anything. I think it was the sheer volume of it, though. Because I had had enough.
Say, you expect Shannon
to remember? There's
no question
about that. There were two things. And it was like, I could. It was, I had had enough, and I'm blocking him because I can. And the realization came, I don't have to look at this nonsense. And it was beautiful. But my favorite part of when that happened, and I think I was at the stadium at that time, was when I blocked him, I kind of laughed to myself because I realized there's no way he's going to know this for about 3 days because his Twitter interaction is just so sporadic. And when he did find out, it was that much more satisfying.
What was it, like a week later or something? I remember I went to look at one of your tweets and it said, you can't view her material anymore. And I was like, why is that? Huh. But then you unmuted me.
For the record.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it wasn't mute. No, was not mute. It was a definite block. We just blew right past mute and went straight to block. I didn't want any of it.
Okay. I still love you, though.
Oh, that's great stuff.
There we go.
Everybody loves each other.
I don't have a butt. There's no butt following that. No, there's no butt.
No butt. DJ, we learned anything else?
Yes, we learned that some types of jokes just age well.
All right. I'm 56 years old. Jim's over 60. Is there something wrong? Did you laugh at that, Shannon? Is it still funny?
There is not enough room in the corner right now. Come on, guys, behave.
No, I'm just... that's the first time I'd heard that. I heard about it, but I hadn't heard it. And I'm usually not into that kind of humor, Shannon, and here I am laughing.
No,
like,
you're not.
Like I'm laughing like a little boy here.
Why am I not surprised?
That's good stuff right there. That's good radio. Man, that must have been a powerful microphone picking that thing up. Holy smokes.
It sounded like it was right behind his rear end.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Ian Poulter.
Ian Poulter. Now, I pictured this guy as having like a mustache and kind of skinny legs and a big like barrel chest kind of upper body guy, sort of out of shape.
No.
What's he look like?
No, he's probably early 40s maybe or right around 40, and he's known for being real fashionable. Wears a visor usually. He's from England. Wow. Yeah, good guy.
Oh, an English guy. All right. What do they call that in England? What he just did? Break wind?
I think so.
Break wind.
Yeah.
Shannon wants to
stay
out of this one.
I can give you some I can give you some good news here. As sports come back and we don't have crowd noise, I think that there is the distinct chance that you do get that again somewhere along the line, to your delight.
Good. That is a silver lining, Shannon, right there. Thank you so much. That is fantastic. I'm encouraged now. All right. That's probably it there, DJ?
Yep, that is all we learned today.
Yeah, it's all the learning. Once you have a fart joke, it all goes downhill from there. So, Shannon, thank you so much for coming on, filling in for Bob. We really appreciate it. And you and Jim being nice to each other. It was fantastic.
Thank you, Shannon.
Yes, we got our quality time. Thank you, guys.
Yep, there we go. All right. I want to thank Ryan Divish and John Clayton, and Bob will be back tomorrow, and we get started at 3. It's Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Oh, shut up. What are you complaining about?